Good morning. This is Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. Well, I'm so pleased to have back as our guest, Mr. Jerry Andrews, who's the Managing Director and Senior Portfolio Manager at Merrill Lynch. You know, Jerry, the first time that you came on, we were talking about your book, Common Sense, to get off of the financial roller coaster. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being back. Thank you for inviting me.
You know, I'm really looking forward to learning more about the progress that you've made on a number of areas with very innovative investments like sustainability. You were talking about that way before anybody else was talking about it. But can you share with our audience, give them a little bit about your, for those who missed the interviews a few years ago, a little bit information about your background, education, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Well, I went to Rutgers, so I'm originally from Staten Island, but I'm a Jersey boy for a lot of years now. And, you know, I was a Latin American studies major. I studied in University of Mexico, Mexico City for a year. I speak Spanish fluently. I also learned how to speak Portuguese. So they're kind of some of my languages that I started studying in high school, 4 years of Latin and all that kind of stuff. So I'm also kind of a product of Catholic education. I went to a Catholic high school, and 4 years of Latin was really a great background to learn other languages. And I think that language is a great key to understanding how people think, and you can relate to people.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is phenomenal. So Spanish, Portuguese, English, Latin. Wow. Any French?
No, I mean, I'm fairly good at reading Romance languages. So even Romanian, I can understand because it's probably the closest thing to Latin out there. So I can, I don't speak Italian or French at all, but I can read it. I mean, I can say some things in Italian, but not really French. And I have that gift. And, it's just like one of those things. We all have things that we are passionate about and that we like. And you might say, well, how the heck did you get involved in, finance after doing that, right? So, for some of the people that are listening to your show, they may be students. And I believe very strongly in that life is a journey, and that the way that you start is not the way that you finish. And that life takes you in directions. And I believe that it presents avenues of growth for us that we don't anticipate. Right. And that when when you're a Latin American studies major, who would have thought I'd be a managing director at Merrill, managing a lot of money and having clients all throughout the United States, from the East Coast of the United States all the way to Alaska and Hawaii. And, but that is not what I had anticipated. And so I got hired my first job speaking, because I spoke Spanish and Portuguese, I was hired to change banknotes at a local currency place in Manhattan. And that led me to become a foreign exchange broker, which I did for 23 years. Sold my, started out as a trainee, ended up being an owner of a couple of different companies and sitting on the boards of directors in the United States, England, and Germany. Sold my interest in 1996. And I was too young to retire. So I decided, what am I going to do when I grow up? And Merrill asked me to join them in 1997. I've been here ever since. And, that has just kind of progressed into different opportunities and different things. So it's, it's really great.
Now, how big is your team? Because your team has grown considerably. How big is you now?
Well, we have an 8-member team. And then we have another 4 people that are kind of affiliated with our team. And then we manage money for a number of different advisors throughout the United States. But the core team is 5 financial advisors. I'm one of them. And then 3 what we refer to as administrative people. So they will actually, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes when you're managing money for people. Sometimes people have to make their income tax payments and, hey, I need a check, or they something happens. There's a death in the family, or, they've just inherited some money, or they've just won the lottery. You never know what's going to happen. So those people on the inside actually help us do all the paperwork and make sure that we're pushing everything through in a compliant manner so that it all works very, very smoothly. So it's a great team. We were just named by Forbes this past month as one of the top teams in New York. And so it's the first year they did it. We're one of 92 teams that were selected. So I'm very proud of my team. They're terrific. We have a lot of longevity in our team going back to 2008 when I first started the team. And that's around the time that you first interviewed me about my book.
Right. That's right. That's right. And what is your investment philosophy? I mean, because you've been in this game a long time, and consistency is very important. When you meet with someone, what do you share with them about your investment philosophy and how you're going to work with them to achieve financial goals?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the working title for my book was actually I Hate Losing Money. And getting off the financial roller coaster is about what happens to people. They find that when the market's going up, they want to become more aggressive. When the market's coming down, they become less aggressive. And so what's actually happening is that the market is actually influencing their emotional decisions. Mm-hmm. And emotional decisions are not rational. They're emotional. And when you're seeing that the market is actually always going to go up and down, there's no such thing as a straight movement in investing, because people are investing for different reasons. So what you have to find out, number one, is how does somebody feel about money? So emotions are very strong. And so when you're asking somebody, how would you feel if you lost 10% of your money, 10, 15%, 20%, 25%, at some point you're going to get an ouch. And people are going to say, I couldn't handle that. You start to get a feeling as to what their downside would be. And then, nobody worries about the upside. So then you have to find out, is this person conservative? Are they moderate? Are they aggressive? Are they moderate to aggressive? And then we tailor the positions that are linked to them according to how they are kind of wired emotionally. And what you're going to find is there are some people that will always spend more money than they make, and there's going to be people that save more money than most people. And there are different chapters in the book. One specifically is why Johnny can't go to college. And there were two different people. One was a Wall Street type who was making tons of money and spent pretty much everything he had. And his brother-in-law was an auto mechanic, ended up opening his own auto shop, and saved a lot. And whose kid can't go to college? Well, it was the Wall Street guy who had spent everything that he had made. And you would have thought, well, he won't have any problem. But stuff happens in people's careers, and I've seen that. So we have some people that are very conservative, and they squirrel away a lot of money. And there are other people that are moderate and squirrel away money. And then there are people that don't save money. And so it's important to understand what people's needs are, what their MO is in terms of their modus operandi. Are they, are they the people that are savers? Are they the people that are spenders? And for the people that are spenders, you have to try to control their spending a little bit. And for the people that are ultra savers, you have to remind them at some point the reason you're saving money is you need to use it. And so that's kind of some of the interesting things that have come into my professional life that you wouldn't realize that you become not only somebody that understands how markets work, but you get to understand how people think. And the first 23 years of my life on Wall Street were on the institutional side. So our clients were basically big banks, and we would pair together buyers and sellers of various currencies. And that's what we did. There would be days that our 14-man team would do $1 billion worth of transactions.
Wow.
And so so you're seeing stuff going fairly quickly. And by the way, on $1 billion day, you would probably do like over a 10-hour period, you'd have two 20-minute sessions where the majority of the activity happened. You'd be in like the sweet spot of the market, and that's when you would do a lot of business. But that's kind of in my history. I've been with Merrill now over 25 years. Matter of fact, this year, 2023, will be my 50th year on Wall Street.
Wow. Bravo. Yeah. Bravo. Congratulations. And thank so I want to say this a few times during our broadcast here. How can someone get in touch with you?
Well, I mean, I think that the best way would be to go on to LinkedIn. You can look for my name on LinkedIn, you know, Jerry Andrews. That's probably an easy way to get to it. And maybe you could send out, you know, like my email address to some of your listeners and my telephone contact information, and be happy to do that. So, you know, if you Google my name and Merrill, it'll definitely come up so you can find me.
Very nice. Very nice. And so your office is actually in New York. You're back in the office.
Yes. Yes. So I do work remotely some days. That's something that was introduced to me, and never thought that I would be someone that would work remotely, but I do spend about 50% of my time in Midtown Manhattan. Our office is located on 47th Street off 6th Avenue. And yeah, so, you know, I do work in New York. Do a lot of different things, you know, aside from managing money. We have a team, so you have to think about how does the team work, conduct weekly meetings with your team, think about when you're going to contact clients, and we literally have hundreds of clients, and also look for new clients. And so we're out looking to how can we best service our existing clients, how can we protect them in bad markets, which is really the essence of what we try to do, is to diversify them and then help them and manage them through, you know, kind of some crazy markets. And so we've seen a number of those over the past, you know, a number of years. And, you know, last year was kind of a crazy year. So you have to pay attention to what's happening. And regardless of what different research analysts will tell you, you have to make the decisions. And so we make fiduciary decisions for our clients, making decisions that will be in their best interest, not in our best interest. I always feel as though put the client's interest first and everything else just falls into place. Clients are happy. We make a living and our firm is happy. And, you know, you don't end up having complaints, because who needs that? And so that's kind of what our philosophy is.
What are your thoughts about the current markets today? I mean, you know, I was just reading the Wall Street Journal where they're saying that the Fed might still make an increase in the rate next month, because they thought the jobs would cool down. You know, it seemed like it's unprecedented times for us.
Well, we're always worried about something. And believe me, like inflation is the big worry right now that the Federal Reserve is trying to tame.
Yeah.
You know, we have to remember that, you know, it is, our research does say that there will be a 25 basis point increase at the May meeting. And a lot of that kind of has happened over the past, you know, last Friday when we had the jobs report come out. Mm-hmm. And then big number coming out on Thursday, which will be the consumer price index, which is going to be, you know, could be an inflationary number. They're expecting it to be 5%. February is like 6%. Mm. So we're starting to see it come down a little bit, but it's way above the 2% target that the Fed has.
Right.
A lot of times these changes, the increases that happen in interest rates by the Federal Reserve, take time to actually hit the economy. And now we're seeing, after the you know, recent banking incidents in California and here in New York, you know, where we had you know, some banks that didn't look like they're going to make it and they got absorbed. Well, you know, that means that the banks are now going to be tightening their lending requirements. So that's also considered to be a tightening portion to the economy, which, in addition to the Fed, will kind of slow things down, which will actually have an effect on mortgage rates, et cetera. So people tend to pull their horns in when interest rates are higher. Businesses are, you know, starting to lay people off. You see a lot of large layoffs coming out of the technology industry, for example, that comes out and they'll say, we're laying off so many people.
Right.
You have to remember, some of these companies hire a lot of people.
Yeah.
The real growth of business is from smaller businesses. You know, you figure your local restaurants and, you know, how many people, you know, sometimes you walk into a place where they are selling pizza and all of a sudden you realize, wow, there's 15 people working here. And so sometimes the smaller businesses that, you know, actually do sometimes have to go to the bank and borrow money, if the borrowing becomes tighter, then they start to, you know, rein in. Do we need a new delivery car? Do we need to expand our store? You know, those type of things. Decisions slow the economy down naturally because of, you know, banking moves that are out there right now.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Mr. Jerry Andrews, who is the Managing Director and Senior Portfolio Manager with Merrill Lynch in New York. He has been on our show before, and you can search on Podbean his name, and you'll see him. You'll see the interview that we did some years ago about the book that he wrote called Common Sense, Getting Off the Financial Roller Coaster for that. Back then, you were very innovative, and you had talked about investing in a more sustainable way, things that were geared towards more productive things in life versus things that are not so productive, like liquor or guns and ammunition. Tell us about that journey. How did you come about that topic to say, I'm going to switch my investment practice, and for it to be so successful?
Well, I believe that you have to understand that not everybody feels the same way about things. So we created different portfolios that are, you know, that are themed. So themed investments. So, for example, what you're referring to is environmentally, socially responsible corporate governance portfolios, right? So I started that back in 2015. Now that's been, you know, that type of investing has been around before 2015. It goes way back, but it became popular over the past number of years. And I didn't do it because, hey, like everybody else is doing it, I should do it. So I actually started doing that, you know, way ahead. 2013 was my first foray in an SRI world. We were requested, people liked our portfolio, but they didn't want to have tobacco and firearms in their portfolio. And so that was our first foray that we created that. And then we moved into the ESG world back in 2015. And then about 4 years ago, we started an LGBTQ portfolio. And the book that I wrote, ironically, back in 2008, the first chapter was about two women, Ashley and Claire, who fell in love and, you know, ended up going through their history of their life and sort of like some financial decisions that they could have made differently. And I'm a big believer in fairness. So I believe that you have to think about, you know, if you have people that have a different view on things than you do, well, they may have the same view as you do, but you have to be aware that somebody who's investing in, say, a Catholic values portfolio may have a different perspective than somebody that is in an LGBTQ portfolio.
Right.
And that, you know, we also do what's, just kind of old-fashioned investing where you have no screens or criteria like that. But in that world where you're actually looking to see environmentally, socially responsible corporate governance, it's not just exclusionary, meaning when I say that we have X tobacco and firearms, you're literally excluding something. When you have something that is ESG, you're also making decisions that are not exclusionary, but inclusionary. And what I mean by that is, you know, what are minorities and women on boards, for example? What is the carbon footprint of a company? What is their water usage? And other themes like that, that help you decide, you know, is this a company that you're going to be able to score? And then you create a scoring, and then you monitor that on a daily basis. The LGBTQ portfolio is actually a little bit easier because there is the Human Rights Campaign based in Boston, and they create a list every year talking about companies that are acceptable and non-acceptable. So you have got a list of companies that, corporations that they say, we like these people, we don't like those people. We, you know, they support our efforts, these companies don't. And so that's the way you create it. The American bishops actually have a list where they come out and they talk about, you know, what are things that are you know, Catholic values. And so they make a decision as to a similar type of thing. So you may have a company that is on both lists, or you may have a company that's on one list and not the other. Mm-hmm. So you can't, you know, you have to create strategies that fit, that take into consideration moderate, aggressive, et cetera. But also, what is the person, is the person more inclined to be in an ESG world? There's all sorts of studies that have come out, and you'd be surprised that, you know, sort of the younger generation are very, very in favor of it. And I'm talking about 80 to 90%, but even baby boomers are like over 50% in favor of ESG investing. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, one way or another that, you know, different people have different perspectives. And then there are other people that may, you know, say, hey, you know, like, I'm really not, you know, interested in those. And what we have found is that there's a myth. And the myth is that sustainable portfolios do not perform as well as non-sustainable portfolios. And our experience has been that's not true. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, have performed pretty well. So, you know, that's, you know, people want to learn more about it, we'd be happy to go through it, but I can't really get into too much detail or rates of return or anything like that, because that's kind of advertised.
Of course. But when you think about, like my daughter Bailey and her fiance, when my daughter Bailey, she's what, 25, and her fiance, when he's what, 29. And he is so much into sustainability, you know, recyclables, you know. And so I guess when you look at, you're starting to see more companies that can be included in your portfolio that meet those particular United Nations guidelines, if you will.
Right. I think that's true. I think that it's becoming, I think companies are very, very specifically looking at, you know, they want to improve their scores. And two of the, you know, MSCI, which is one screening methodology, and Bloomberg has another one. We use Bloomberg to do our screening for us. And, you know, there are guidelines, and you can actually say, you know, this is how much we are going to score carbon footprint. This is how much we're going to score. You know, if a company scores over a certain percentage in, you know, X, Y, and Z, we're not going to allow them into the portfolio. Bless you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is a growing theme. And, you know, one man's or one person's ESG is not necessarily another person's ESG, right? So people are really saying, do you have this? Can you do that? Can you do this? So there are very specific portfolios that could be run. You can't run everything efficiently. So you have to decide, well, what is it that you can do efficiently?
Before we dive into your leadership style and perspective, because you got this very successful team that was just named to Forbes, one of the best teams in state as well. For that, I just want to get your viewpoint on what's going on with cryptocurrencies. And do any of your clients ever say, Jerry, I want to invest in Bitcoin? And how do you manage that?
Well, we don't. We don't actually, I mean, I understand what cryptocurrency is, and we don't have any crypto positions in our portfolio. And, you know, there's a lot of controversy about it. And I think you can see that. And by the way, we had a member of our team who decided to go into crypto research, and he moved to Puerto Rico, and, you know, he's a great guy and he's a very bright guy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that believe very strongly in it. It does have a very erratic movement at times, and, you know, more so than, say, traditional markets.
Okay.
You have to bear in mind that at one point, you know, crypto was, you know, say Bitcoin was trading like over $60,000, then it went down to $16,000. Yeah. And it's trading around $28,000. It's supposed to be a fiat currency, meaning that it's supposed to be in place of a fiat currency. So. Right. The US dollar, the British pound, the Japanese yen, Swiss franc, the, you know, the euro dollar,
right,
are considered to be fiat currencies, which is, you know, faith in the government that backs them.
Right.
And so, you know, I did currencies for 23 years, and I do understand that, you know, I can understand why some people might say, hey, why are people putting so much faith in a currency? Well, currencies do tend to move in tandem with interest rates. So as you're seeing interest rates go higher in a particular country as opposed to another country, if you took two countries that had a 1% interest rate, for example, and their currency was $1 equals one of their unit, and then the currency of one unit, their interest rate went up to 1.5%, well, you would see some kind of a movement in that other currency above the value of the other currency because people are following interest rates. And then you have a certain amount of speculation in currencies. But at the end of the day, although they do go up and down, at the end of the day, a Swiss franc is backed by the Swiss National Bank, a Japanese yen is backed by the Bank of Japan. And there is no real central bank for crypto. And so that's kind of, that's kind of my own personal opinion on it. We do have research on cryptocurrencies. We do not offer them at this point. That doesn't mean at some point in the future we won't.
Right.
But crypto tends to be, a lot of people like to buy gold that are, say, above 40, and people below 40 like to buy crypto. Okay. And it's sort of like the way that they look at what's safety. So like if you think gold is more valuable than a currency, you buy gold. And if you're younger, you might buy crypto. But, they're considered hedges.
Believe it or not, I mean, the time with you always flies by, and we have a couple minutes left. I'd like to for you to share with our audience, what are your best practices in managing your team to be so successful?
Well, I think that one of the things that you have to do when you're putting together a team is that I believe that one of the things that is really important to me is fairness. And you have to be fair. And I think fairness is a two-way street. And I explain this to people. I want to be fair to you. I want you to be fair to me. And so I work under the assumption that the people that I, decide to work with are also deciding to work with me. And so that's a two-way street from the get-go, right? And I think you also have to have a great amount of trust in the people that work for you. Mm-hmm. And the way that you develop trust is that they have to have trust in you. Mm-hmm. So because of that, you have to, anything that I ever say to someone is like got to be 100% true. Mm-hmm. I can't tell somebody that this might happen, then it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. I will say this is what we're going to do, and then that's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And I am not going to go back and say I've changed my mind. Mm-hmm. I've done this for my entire career on Wall Street, and sometimes I've lost a lot of money because of the decisions I've made, and I'm talking personally. Mm-hmm. And other times I've done very well. But at the same time, I can always look at anybody in the mirror and say, what I told you I was going to do, I did. Right. And that's important to me. And so, and it's, you can make decisions to do something and tell people that you're going to do it, and it may cost me money. Mm-hmm. And so I'm willing to make those types of decisions. And I think that, being able to decide what you're going to tell people, what you're going to do, and then doing it, it doesn't sound very difficult. Like when you say you're going to do something and you do it, you'd say, well, isn't that what everybody's supposed to do? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but that's not really what happens. I think that a lot of people, we've all been in an experience where we've purchased something from someone, and you go and you buy something and it sounds great. And then when you get home, it doesn't necessarily work the way you wanted it to work. And then you go back and the guy says, well, I'm sorry, that's what it is. And there's not, I believe that you have to, that's the way a team works. The team has to understand that everything that you say, you mean. Everything that they say, they mean.
Yeah.
That we can be on the same level. That we have weekly meetings, one meeting a month. I conduct our weekly meetings every week except for the first Tuesday of the month, and then everybody in the team takes a turn, and then they conduct the meeting. And there's no criteria as to what they want to talk about. It's their canvas, and they can paint it any way they want, and that's also good that everybody understands that. you know, they're actually contributing in their own way.
Okay. Well, Jerry, we are out of time. I want to thank our guests, Mr. Jerry Andrews, who's the Managing Director and Senior Portfolio Manager for Merrill Lynch, for coming on our program. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up this week on Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter on WSOU 89.5 FM. And remember, leadership begins with you.